Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to INWIT Full Year 2017 Financial Results Conference Call. Michele Vitale, Head of Investor Relations, will introduce the event.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Our CEO, Mr. Oscar Cecchetti, and our CFO, Mr. Raphael Perrino, will provide you with an update on our 2017 full year operating and financial performance. The presentation will be followed by a Q&A session. Please take note of our disclaimer policy that should now see on slide 2. Let me highlight that the reported data refer to the financial statement at December 31st, 2017. Let me guide you through the presentation.
Adesso passo passo vi guiderò nella presentazione. Vedete che la INWIT continua il suo percorso di crescita, diversificazione ed efficientamento. Tutte le nostre azioni che portano ad aumentare i nostri asset, arricchire il portafoglio con nuovi asset e servizi. Tutto questo ci ha consentito di conseguire il nostro target low teens e TTDA di crescita e a fornire un flusso di nuove business che adesso possono decolare. Adesso vedete che i risultati ci vedono a poter fornire tutto quanto noi ci eravamo prefissi nel livello operativo, finanziario. Il tenancy ratio è aumentato di 1,82 volte, confermando il trend di crescita, e di 0,1 l'anno. Questo grazie ai nuovi tenant e soprattutto gli OTMO. Allo stesso tempo i ricavi sono aumentati del 6,9% per l'anno, questo rispetto al 2016. Un piano di efficientamento è in linea con le aspettative ed è anche un programma del 4,8% di riduzione dei costi, e questo è spinto da acquisizione di terreni, rinegoziazioni e dismissioni. Il programma di investimento adesso porterà ad una nuova crescita e viene dispiegato in linea con il piano. Il CAPEX è aumentato del 57,3% anno su anno fino a raggiungere 55,4 milioni di euro e i ricavi dai nuovi siti e i nuovi servizi hanno una crescita notevole. Come risultato l'EBITDA ancora una volta è dei double digit, e do la parola adesso all'Oscar Cecchetti per i risultati del 2017 e Raphael Perrino vi fornirà un'analisi approfondita dei nostri risultati finanziari. Al termine ci sarà una sessione Q&A e voi vi potete prenotare premendo 0. Adesso do la parola ad Oscar. Grazie, grazie Michele e buon pomeriggio a tutti. Come mi è solito, io mi incentrerò sui ricavi. Come vedete nella diapositiva numero 5, il totale per l'anno 2017 in termini di ricavi ammonta a 356 milioni, diviso in tre cluster diversi. Ricavi per il MSA, il Master Service Agreement con la TIM, e i siti ereditati con l'OPA, che sono aumentati del 2%. Questo come è previsto da contratto. L'escalator sarà del 100% del CPI e nell'ultimo anno era stato predefinito al 2%, quindi questo relativo al 2017. I ricavi dagli altri operatori hanno raggiunto gli 88,1 milioni di euro, con un aumento del 13% rispetto al 2016. E derivano dai tenant olo che sono 9.400 e comprendono dei ricavi una tanto riguardo al servizi di installazione. Adesso vorrei parlare del revenue stream. Più di 10,5 milioni di euro attribuibile a nuovi servizi. Il terzo cluster sono appunto i Reddit, questi nuovi siti, nuovi servizi, che ammontano a 10,5 milioni di euro, con una crescita anno su anno significativa. Metà di questi risultati sono stati alimentati da 300 nuovi siti e più di 1000 small cells che sono in funzione. Altri 5,2 milioni derivano da 350 siti originariamente designati per la dismissione, ma mantenuti dalla team per motivi di densificazione. Questo si allinea con
translates into an additional annual recurring fee of 5.2 million that team has to pay from 2017 onwards. All in all, you can see the total revenues grew by almost 23 million in 1 year, equivalent to 6.9% versus 2016. Even cost-wise, the trend is positive. Slide 6 gives you an overview of the efficiencies gained in terms of operating expenses. The total OPEX amount to 164.6 million euro, and the trend can be better understood by breaking down the total amount in three components that are shown in the chart. First, ground lease cost decreased by another 5% compared to those of 2016, and this is a net result of the reduction achieved through our efficiency plan and the increase of around 2.4 million euro related to new sites. Personnel costs grew slightly, mainly due to the headcount increase, and other operating expenses slightly decreased by approximately 1% year on year. All in all, you can see on the slide that the OPEX trend is showing a reduction of 3% on a year-over-year basis. I think it's worth mentioning that in 3 years we achieved a cost reduction of 14 million, notwithstanding the increasing number of new sites, the costs related to new businesses, and the headcount step up. Moving to the next slide, slide number 7, let me show you the main KPIs that can better explain our performance. On the left, revenues, and on the right, costs. As far as revenues are concerned, let me highlight that the point of services other than TIM hosted on our towers grew from 8.4 thousand to 9.4 thousand, with around 1,000 additional tenants activated in 2017. Consequently, the tenancy ratio further increased to 1.82, thus delivering our 0.1 target growth rate per year. Let me remind you that we started with 1.55 and plan to reach 1.9 by the end of this year. As for the average revenue per site, the year-on-year growth reached a good 7% for a total amount of 32.1 thousand euro per site. On the right-hand side, we focus on our lease cost reduction plan and on the two drivers of the plan, TIM decommissioning obligations and lease reduction through renegotiation and land acquisition. Let me start from decommissioning. TIM was committed to decommission 1.4 thousand sites by the end of last year, 2017, but decided to decommission only 1,050 sites and to retain 350 for densification reasons. As provided for in the MSA, this translates into an additional recurring annual fee of 5.2 million that TIM has to pay every year starting from last year, starting from 2017. The combination of this additional fee and the savings achieved by dismantling drives an EBITDA run rate uplift of about 14 million euro. Finally, we decided to keep 200 sites left by TIM as they are well positioned to host new customers, let me say, especially the new mobile network operator. Moving to least cost reduction plan, the chart shows a recap of the results achieved so far. We have renegotiated more than 3,500 contracts and acquired 600 lands or long-term right of usage of rooftops. The effect of those actions is an EBITDA run rate increase of 16 million. All in all, the average lease cost per site in 2017 dropped to €12,300, diminishing by 5% year on year and by an impressive 14% since the carve out. In slide number 8, I would like to recap our achievements in the new businesses. Regarding new sites, in 2017 we have managed to build 300 new operative sites, generating run rate revenues for more than 7 million euro. More than 200 additional new sites are currently either under construction or waiting for the permits to start the construction. So we are more than in line with our plan of 500 new sites for the end of this year. And I do believe that this is the minimum target that we will achieve. Moving to small cell, in 2017, more than 1,000 remote units have been deployed. 80% of the small cell built up, of these 1,000 small cell built up, are already generating revenues for a total run rate of more than 3.5 million euro. The remaining 20% has been activated in the first months of 2018. Considering the small cells under construction and the prospects we are working upon, more than 1,500 additional remote units are expected, and this leaves us comfortable to deliver the challenging target of 4,000 small cells to be deployed by the end of 2018. Finally, let's talk about the fiber backhauling. In 2017, we have built 140 active backhauling connections for 600,000 run rate revenues. Here, we have been dealing with several startup issues that have been properly addressed. And in the last quarter, we built up more than 100 connections. I would leave you with two takeaways on our investment in new business. First, we are absolutely in line with our double-digit IRR policy for all the development capex. Second, we have invested this year, last year, less than our forecast, but the acceleration in the 4Q show that we can afford an annual capex in line with our plan. So now I hand over to Rafael for the financial side of our 2017 results presentation.
Thank you, Oscar, and good afternoon to you all. To begin with, let me review with you the main KPIs for this full year 17. Revenues stand at 356.6 million euros, and with OPEX at 164.6 million euros, we reached an EBITDA of 192 million euros. During this year, we have made investments for 55.4 million euros. In these 12 months of 2017, net income amounted to 126.7 million euros. Analyzing this data more in detail, it is worth highlighting our solid top-line performance with a revenue increase of 6.9% versus full year 16, a remarkable EBITDA increase of 17.4% versus full year 16. Let me underline that, notwithstanding our business enlargement, our costs are constantly decreasing. In particular, let me focus on the OPEX components. Lease costs fell by 4.6% year over year, with a 6.5 million euro reduction. Personal costs increased by 1.4 million euro year over year, mainly due to the increase in the headcount dedicated to new business deployment. Other costs decreased by 0.2 million euro year over year. Overall, as previously mentioned, total OPEX decreased by 5.3 million euro, equivalent to a 3.1% decline versus full year 16. As expected, net financial interest for the period amounted to 3.7 million euro, aligned to what we registered in 2016, 3.5 million euro. During this 12 months, P&L taxes stood at 48.8 million euros. So our net income for the period equaled 126.7 million euros, exhibiting an impressive growth of 29.5% compared to full year 16. Moving to slide 11, let me show you our historical performance from the IPO until today in terms of the main economics achieved. As you can see, our EBITDA kept growing constantly. We have gone from 134.6 million euro at carve out to 192 million euro in full year 17, steadily widening our EBITDA margin from 42.9% in full year 14 pro forma to 53.8% in this 12 months of 2017. To corroborate these achievements, let me point out how strongly correlated our EBITDA margin and our tenancy ratio are, as visible in the growth of ratio during our equity story from 1.55 times in full year 14 pro forma to 1.82 times in actual full year 17. At an average pace of 0.1 times per year. In fact, as a result, we achieved an EBITDA margin of almost 54% in full year 17. All these results are due to our strong commercial effort in both our traditional business and in new technologies. This effort is visible in our investments, which more than doubled from the beginning of 2017 and show a year-over-year growth of 56.7%. Also, let me highlight that 90% of CapEx are destined to new businesses development. This investment path is expected to deliver an upside EBITDA of an additional 8 to 10 million euros, and confirms our forecast for a double-digit IRR. On slide 12, you can see a drill down through our full year 17 net income of 126.7 million euros, scoring a year-over-year increase of 29.5%, which led to earnings per share up to 21.1 euro cent on an annual basis. This increase in net income mainly stems from a 6.9% increase in revenues and a 3.1% decrease in total operating expenses, leading to a 53.8% full year 17 EBITDA margin. Similarly, our EBIT margin achieved a top-notch 50.3%. Concerning taxes and interest charges, as the slide shows, we have 48.8 million euros of taxes carried in the 12-month period with an implicit tax rate of 27.9% and interest charges equal to 3.7 million euros. On slide 13, you can see our cash flow at December 2017. The CapEx rollout is in line with our investment plan. In 2017, we invested 55.4 million euros, of which 50.7 million euros dedicated to our expansion activities, such as land acquisition, new sites, and small cells. 4.7 million euros of ordinary capex. This quarter, our EBITDA minus capex amounted to 136.6 million euros, while we achieved a recurring free cash flow of 127.6 million euros, growing from 109.1 million euros full year 16. Moreover, this year we reported a positive variation of net working capital of 6.9 million euros, primarily due to seasonal swing in commercial working capital, cash advance on lease cost, and the Brescia project second installment. Moreover, there is also tax cash out of 65.4 million euros, which is due to the payment of a final tranche of 2015 and 2016 taxes, and the first and second tranche of 2017 taxes, as highlighted in the upper right box. Thus, we delivered deposit cash flow to equity amounting to 76.7 million euros. Let me remind you that we distributed 88.2 million euros in dividends, equivalent of roughly 15 cents per share, or a roughly 3% dividend yield. In the following slide, we provide you with an overview of our balance sheet at December 2017. At the end of this last quarter, our net financial position amounted to 45.6 million euros. The current situation leads to a net debt on annualized EBITDA ratio of about 0.24 times, leaving our financial leverage significantly below 1x EBITDA. Lastly, with respect to 3Q17, the fully distributable reserves at quarter end increased up to 803 million euro, corresponding to approximately 1.34 euro per share. Please, Oscar.
Thank you, Rafael. Now let's move from the past to the future. And let me describe what we want to do in the years to come. Let me start by saying that our equity story will not change and will be reinforced in its key pillars as highlighted in this chart, in slide number 16. So three typical components of our equity story: low risk, growth story, additional opportunities. Low risk thanks to high revenue visibility. As you know, high visibility on revenues is a typical attribute of the tower industry and is secured in INWIT by long-term contracts. We have an 8+8+8 year contract with our anchor tenant TIM and 6+6 contracts with other customers. These contracts account for 18 times the 2017 revenues. It's also worth noting that the structure of those contracts provides us with an inflation escalator and full protection against deflation. Just to give you an idea, every inflation point leads to 1.5 percentage increase points of recurring free cash flow. The second is growth. INWIT will continue in the years to come its growth trajectory. What we have done in the past years and what we are planning to do in the next years give us confidence that our revenues, our EBITDA, our cash flow will continue to increase. We expect more OLO contracts from existing as well as new customers, and this will trigger a co-tenancy increase of 0.1 per year. New businesses to take off in all the single components, and ground lease costs to be further reduced thanks to our renegotiation processes and our land acquisition plan. Such growth trajectory will be sustained by 300 million of CapEx in 3 years, mainly dedicated to new sites, new services, and land acquisition. Finally, we continue to see additional opportunities in the consolidation perspectives. Here, the question is not if, but only when this trend will come to a reality. Having this in mind, we continue to see our financial flexibility as a plus because we can afford without any problem our investment plan, we can preserve a generous dividend policy, and we are ready to seize consolidation opportunities. Now, in the next slides, I will focus on growth, on expected growth and its drivers. On slide 17, you find some comments on the first driver of growth, the new tenants that we expect will choose our infrastructures. We have several reasons to be optimistic about the OLO revenues trend. We expect more tenants from our existing customer base, mainly for densification needs. Here, of course, we can leverage on the well-established relationships with the mobile network operators, with the fixed and wireless access providers, and with all the other radio players. A relevant contribution will come from new customers. Of course, the most interesting prospect is the new mobile network operator, Iliad, that we believe should intensively use our sites in its network deployment because we can offer the best-in-class Italian infrastructure. But there are other new customers that will come from the wholesale-only fiber networks that will be built up in the so-called market failure areas supported by public funds. I'm talking about the Infratel auctions. In those projects, in all those projects, thousands of fixed wireless access points of service are required to make available the ultra-broadband access to 100% of households. Finally, amendments. This is quite new. In our business model, the amendments for network updates have not been relevant so far. But in the journey from 4G to 5G, we expect some mobile network operators to look for more space and more services on our tower in order to deploy 5G. This is something we are already experiencing in the 5G trials in Italy. All this is reflected in the co-tenancy trend. We expect to further increase our co-tenancy from the current 1.82 to 1.9 at the end of 2018 and to 2.1 in 2020. Slide number 18, the second pillar of our revenue growth target is related with the new services. I think it could be useful to elaborate on this. Here, I've summarized some qualitative trends that are expected to increase the sharing of network components among mobile network operators and, as a consequence, to enlarge the business scope of the TowerCos. The growth of mobile data consumption at 40% per year, that is taken for granted in the most reliable forecast, means that in 6 years, the total amount of data will increase eightfold. Mobile network operator, while waiting for 5G, will be called to put on air more spectrum already available on existing POPs and increase the number of POPs. If 5G and its evolution to 4G and its evolution to 4.5G outline a positive environment for TowerCos, I do believe that 5G will offer many more opportunities. This is due to a network evolution that will be grounded on technologies that call for emitting points. millimeter waves that will be used to provide high speed and low latency features have a much shorter coverage radius, and so more cell will be required to cover the same space. Today, network architects predict that the ratio between macro sites and small cell in a fully deployed 5G architecture will be at least 1 to 10. The third box at the bottom of the slide shows that it's not clear what customer will do with the new performances and how operator will monetize the new services. 5G will certainly support many new use cases and will foster new business models open to new service providers. So let me recap. In few words, this slide says more demand for data coming from users and traffic per user increase. More investment in spectrum and technology required to the mobile network operator to evolve 4G and introduce 5G. Uncertainties on monetization of the new business cases powered by the new mobile networks. I don't believe that some extreme proposals to deploy a single 5G network and transform mobile network operators in service providers, recently discussed also in the US, I don't believe that those proposals will prevail. But this is a clear signal that the industry needs to reduce the total cost of ownership of the network, and the mobile operator will be more and more willing to share. The consequences of the aforementioned increasing willingness to share are summarized in this slide 18. More customer, more shared infrastructures, consolidation. More customers. We have already said that we expect from existing as well new traditional customer. Here, I think it's worth mentioning that innovative providers enabled by the 5G architectures and performances will expand the addressable customer base of wireless infrastructures providing. For this reason, we forecast a co-tenancy increase in the next 3 years at the same pace of the last 3 years. But what I want to say is that it's absolutely reasonable to extrapolate an additional linear growth beyond the plan horizon, supported by the demand and supported also by new rules on the electromagnetic emission that should align the Italian regulation on European standards. It's reasonable to assume that this change will happen before 2020. In addition to an increase in the absolute number of customers, we expect more infrastructures to be shared among mobile operators. I refer to some elements already included in our plan, such as shared backhauling that we will build up and offer to all our customers, small cells where we want to be the market leader and expect a significant growth, but also to something that is not yet included in the plan. We do believe that more network components could be shared among operators and provided by tower costs in the next years. Just as an example, the tower data center to host mobile operator caching server is an opportunity that could turn into reality in the near future. And it's reasonable to believe that long-term mobile network operator could share also active element and network layers, starting from the legacy ones, which no more grant competitive advantages. All of the above will generate a consistent increase in revenues from new businesses. Our target is to grow from the current level of 10 million euro to over 65 million euro in revenues from new sites and new services. And we can assume that this exponential growth we will experience in the next 3 years can continue in the years beyond the plan horizon. Now, if the assumption, let's come to the third box, if the assumptions on the increasing willingness to share of the mobile operator will prove correct, the infrastructures managed by TowerCos will continue to increase. To that extent, we could expect new sales leaseback transaction between operator and tower cos, and new infrastructure like backhauling small cell being directly deployed by tower cos. Last and not least, aggregation among tower cos is also very likely. Finally, in slide 20 and 21, our plan targets. In slide 20, you can see a recap of our double-digit EBITDA growth track record from 2015 onward. We confirm our 2018 EBITDA guidance, but we want to highlight that the actions included in our plan, like the co-tenancy at 1.9, new site, new services, lease cost reduction, allow us to forecast an improvement on such performance. Let's now have a look beyond this year. We already said the dynamics so far described shall bring our co-tenancy to 2.1 in 2020, and new sites, new services will generate more than 65 million of revenues. This will underpin a revenue growth across the plan that will stand in the mid-single digit area on a compounded basis. Although the effort on efficiency and lease cost reductions will be able to couple the revenue trend providing a robust EBITDA performance and increase in margin in the next years, we will not be providing an EBITDA guidance due to the strong impact on such metric that will come from the adoption of IFRS 16 accounting principle. In order for our performance to be directly and constantly monitored by our investor without having to sterilize for accounting changes, we are instead offering guidance on cash flow generation, where we are expecting a low teens recurring free cash flow growth on a compounded basis to 2020. So in a nutshell, we have just gone through three very positive years, and this, I believe, is just a stimulus to push us further in the years to come. Let me close with a final comment on our future. Without downplaying the role of our core, more traditional business that will keep on being the cornerstone of our future, we believe the true pot of gold for our rentless value growth must be searched in how new businesses shall increase their stake in our overall offer, and what we are presenting today is just a hint at the world to come on these matters. Thank you.
Oscar, thank you. We can now open the Q&A session. Rafael Perrino, Andrea Balzarini and Oscar Cecchetti will be happy to answer your questions.
The Q&A session is now open. You can register for your question pressing star followed by 1. You can cancel your reservation pressing star followed by 2. First question comes from Mr. Fabio Pavan from Mediobanca. Mr. Pavan, your question please.
Yes, hello, and thank you for taking my question. First of all, let me start by congratulating for the good set of numbers, and in particular for the impressive delivery since the time of the IPO. Now, coming back to questions, the first one is on 5G. You have managed to run a trial on 5G, so it would be super interesting to have any kind of feedback and some more details on this kind of new service, new kind of infrastructure. The second question is your indication for 2020 are pretty clear and extremely convincing in suggesting 2.1 times as a co-tenancy ratio achievable. On the other hand, it seems you have also a strong degree of confidence in consolidation, which I would share. But my question is, Given the existing limits on regulation, considering that you already are expecting to reach 2.1 times as a co-tenancy, what kind of efficiencies we should expect from consolidation, i.e., what should be with the current regulatory framework an achievable co-tenancy target, even when considering the consolidation? Thank you.
Thank you, Fabio. Very interesting question, as usual. So the first, I think it's very good, very, very good question about 5G, because of course we are in the first time, in the first weeks, months of the real life with the trials that are up and running in some Italian cities and managed by the mobile operators. So I think that we have two relevant takeaways. The first is that mobile operators needs something more on the existing POPs, because the 5G antennas are larger than the 4G, because they need more space for several reasons. So as I was saying in my presentation, we have an opportunity for amendments. You know, the amendments that are very, very crucial, very key in the US TowerCos, in our business models, that is a heritage of the previous sharing agreement among operators, they were absolutely not relevant. Now, with the evolution, what we are seeing is that for the first time, I do believe we will have some potential revenue growth related to the amendments. The second is that we are not yet in the intensive deployment of small cell. So what we are seeing is that we are called to deploy small cell in the cities where 5G has been deploying, but we are not in the very, very acceleration of small cell needs. Because, you know, in the trials, the operators are using just the 3.6, 3.8 gigahertz frequency. And so this is a frequency, this is a spectrum that could be easily put on air on the macro towers. As soon as the operators will add to the 3.6, 3.8 gigahertz the new spectrum, that is 28 gigahertz and more, at this point, we will see a big need for small cell. So what I have to say is that first, something new is coming from the trials, but of course, the most relevant value driver that we see in the 5G is not yet in place, because the highest frequencies of 20 gigahertz are not yet used by the operator. The second is your question about our optimism on the co-tenancy increase. So here, let me split my answer in two bullet points. The first, demand. The demand is there, and I've already said that we expect demand coming from densification, because the mobile network operator, but also fixed wireless access provider, are expanding their network. Main fixed wireless access provider are expanding network. Mobile network operator will need some selective new site, number of sites for densification. So we expect the first, let's say, wave coming from the existing customer. What is relevant to say is that we are in a very, very a good situation with the new players, because everybody knows about the fourth operator. The fourth operator is starting its deployment. We, of course, as usual, we have very, very good negotiation with them at a good stage, and I believe they will come to a reality very, very soon. But there are also other potential new customers. I mentioned the fixed wireless, new fixed wireless access provider that could come from the results of the Infratel auctions. In all the projects, now I'm referring to Enel Open Fiber, in all the projects deployed to fulfill the Infratel requirement to make the ultra broadband available to 100% of the households, in all those projects, there is a significant role for the final fixed wireless access. And this for us could mean thousands of new POPs that could be required. So just to be, to make a long story short, demand is there. We expect demand. Now the issue is the capability, the problem of the electromagnetic limits. Here I want to say two things. First, the fixed wireless access network have a very, very low power emission, so this is not an issue. Second, now we are talking about 3 years to come from now to 2020. I do believe that we could start, we didn't do that, but we could start to include in our business models, in our assumption that change in the regulation in Italy can come in the plan horizon.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Simon Coles from Barclays. Mr. Coles, your question, please.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking the question. So my first one's on the guidance. When I look at consensus, you have about 40 million for new services revenues, and you're guiding for 65 million by 2020. And so I'm just wondering, if you hit your targets, which you have done ever since IPO, does the guidance look on the conservative side, do you think? And then secondly, on small cells, we've clearly seen quite a ramp up in the last quarter. You did like 400 or so, you did 600 in the first 9 months of 2017. What's the main driver behind this? Do you think this is going to continue to accelerate and therefore make it easy for you to hit your 4,000 target by the end of this year? Just wondering how the dynamics on the small cell demand are playing out at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. So the first question was about our forecast, our guideline for the revenue from that will come from new service. I do believe that this is the number that we have in our plan. So we expect the new services and new sites to generate in 2020 just a bit more than 65 million, and this is what this is the guidance that we deliver. You can make them all the maths in the numbers, but I assure you that this is the right number. The second is the small cell. Here I think that the first of all, the ramp up, it's something that is related with the, I would say, with the process that goes from the prospects to the activation of the small cell. So what is clear is that year by year, month by month, the need for small cell start to be very, very clear, very, very evident to everybody. Let me just give you, tell you something about the 4G, because in 5G is clear what we can expect. But in 4G, you know that all the problems that the operators have in their coverage, in their performance, usually referred to indoor situation. The operator knows that more than 8% of the data traffic is generated indoor. So all the problem indoor could be solved by small cell. So that's to say that we continue to see room in 4G and we see the explosion in 5G. Now, having done the 4Q, a good performance in the 4Q, give us the confidence, let's say, make us confident that we will continue, and recognizing that the 4,000 target is absolutely challenging, We want to continue, we want to maintain this challenge in our plan because we know we have more than 1.5 remote units already in our prospects and in our projects, and we do believe that we can gather more other orders. So all in all, 4,000 this year is challenging, but we feel confident to maintain our target.
That's very clear. Thank you. I just thought of one follow-up. What inflation have you baked into your guidance?
I think that the right number can be given by Andrea Balzarini.
1.2.
That's great. Thank you very much.
This was an assumption before the results of the Italian elections.
Next question comes from Ricard Boada from Morgan Stanley. Mr. Boada, your question, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions, and first of all, congratulations on your outstanding results. I have three different questions. The first one is on small cells. Can you please touch on the target of rolling out like 10,000 small cells? I would like to understand how much is driven by Telecom Italia and how much is it driven from other MNOs. And then within the Telecom Italia demand, how do you structure these contracts? Are they like multi-year contracts similar with a term length in line of with the MSA, or like is there like a different structure? Then secondly, Oscar, do you believe that there is an opportunity for the towers and the data center industries to converge? We're seeing very interesting moves these days, both from American Tower and Crown Castle, which are looking to expand into the mobile edge computing space, which we believe would be crucial to support the autonomous vehicle ecosystem. And then finally, just another question on 5G. I would like to understand your thoughts on whether do you believe that a combination with NL Open Fiber would make some sense. Clearly, like in a 5G world, there are a lot of synergies of putting these two businesses together. For instance, sharing the fiber that connects the small cells. And also from an equity story perspective, you would be creating the first neutral host player with access to both fixed and mobile infrastructure globally, which could be quite interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Many questions. Let's say the first is about small cells. So we don't provide a guidance about the breakdown of the 10,000 between TIM and the market. Let me say that I think that this answer could be combined with the answer to the second question about the contracts with TIM. So usually we are available to provide our customer with single operator small cell. We are available to do that with all our customers. The unique customer that accepted to use us as a provider for these services so far has been TIM. So usually in the framework agreement, because we have a framework agreement with TIM, we have a price list that of course provide for higher prices in case of monotenant and lower prices in terms of multi-tenant. So the relationship usually is based on the following dynamics. Usually the operator starts by asking mono for competitive edge, and then when they make all the evaluation with the price, they accept to stay on a multi-operator solution. So having said that, there is also a time issue, because when we put a single operator small cell in a good location, for me, for INWIT, this is, let's say, to make the first step, so to be the first mover in putting our staff in the good locations. We can also start by being by serving just one customer, but of course, sooner or later, we can transform this contract from mono to multi. So that's to, this is the reason why we don't provide a breakdown of the 10,000 small cell remote unit that we expect for the end of 2020 in mono, other, team, other operator. There is an, a parameter that is relevant, and that is in the all, in 100% of our multi-operator small cell, we already have a co-tenancy higher than 2. The third question is very, very interesting about the convergence between cloud provider and TowerCo. I believe that the cloud that could be provided by tower company is a specialized cloud, is a distributed cloud. So you know that in the mobile network architecture there are two parallel processes. The first is migration of intelligence from access to the core for the network virtualization projects. And the second is migration, exactly the opposite, migration of intelligence from the core to the edge, referring to cache server and IP edge. For these reasons, we do believe that the operators will ask for cloud in the tower. Sooner or later, I think this could be could come to reality in 3-4 years, I don't know. Of course, this is a niche cloud market. The reason why other tower operators are dealing with the cloud in a very, in a more aggressive way is because they, as a matter of fact, are moving from the tower to another industry. If you look at Crown Castle, Crown Castle now starts to have a significant fiber business model inside their business model. And so for these reasons, I do believe this could trigger also their interest in the cloud. As far as the fourth question is concerned, the Enelope and Fiber, first, I didn't mention them when I was talking about the new fixed wireless access provider in the market failure areas. But of course, the first auctions of Infratel have been won by Enelope and Fiber. So of course, our customer in that case would be exactly Enelope and Fiber. It's, I think that the what you are envisaging, a combination of different models, is something that is absolutely not on the on the desk. So we want to be the leader neutral loss provider for small cell. This is our goal. We are not interested in becoming neutral loss for fiber, but we want to be the leader neutral loss in Italy for small cell.
Yeah, that was extremely clear.
Next question comes from Mr. Eric Hearst from Credit Suisse. Mr. Hearst, your question, please.
Yeah, thanks very much. Your comments around amendments is very interesting. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit in terms of what would trigger additional revenues? And how will you, I mean, maybe it's a bit early, but how will you account for that? Will that be accounted as new tenants, or will it be just a higher lease rate? Maybe a little bit on that. Then secondly, you're mentioning as well potential new tenants from IoT and public service. Is that, I just want to check, is that broadly the same price as regular tenants, or I assume they use less space on the tower, so is that sort of a discount? And then in terms of the active sharing between MNOs, you said that was an opportunity for you to generate more revenues. I would have guessed it would be less. So maybe if you can just clarify how that will benefit your business. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Eric. So the amendments, it's too early to shape what we can expect from the amendments. Just to be clear, we have one customer that is a TIM that will never pay amendments, because in the master service agreement, they have many obligations, but they have also the right that is all an all-you-can-eat formula. They can use the towers transferred at the IPO by putting on air whatever they want without additional fees. So when I talk about amendments, Telecom Italia is excluded. TIM is excluded. Now, what I was saying is that the other operators, and this is something that we are learning in the 5G trials, in the 5G, they need more services and more space in the tower. And so for this, we, of course, our answer is okay, but of course you have to pay for it. How will we account those additional revenues? Of course, as an increase, as an uplift of hosting revenues, non-new tenants. Second question, what about IoT and public safety? There is a difference among the two. IoT is exactly what you were saying. So small equipment, low power. So we sell space and services at those guys with the relevant discount. Public safety is just a bit different because public safety usually needs more space. And so what we... our price list, our price policy for the current public safety operator is in line with our price policy towards the other radio player. The third was about the active sharing. You are right. Here, there is a trade-off. So usually, when we say active sharing, we think of the RAN sharing. And this is a risk for the tower co, no doubt about it. The problem, you know that in the European countries, the attitude to share the access nodes, it's absolutely not common. What I refer when I talk about active sharing is sharing of additional equipment. So just to give you an example, all the operators around the world are talking about a switch off of some network layers. Now, many operators have planned to switch off the 3G. There are no operators that have planned to switch off the 2G. And the reason is very clear, because 2G is for roaming, and 2G is for serving the first wave of machine-to-machine, of Internet of Things. So it's absolutely reasonable to expect that the operators, sooner or later, as soon as they realize that they have very good spectrum dedicated to this poor service, roaming for emerging countries and machine-to-machine, they will take into the consideration the possibility to have one network layer, 2G, shared among them, and refarming the very good spectrum they are using for 2G in the 4 and 5G. So this is the reason why I continue to believe the sharing attitude increasing. Of course, sharing attitude based on someone else that is ready and accepted as a provider for those services. I don't know if I properly answered your question.
Oh, that's great. Thanks very much.
Next question comes from Mr. Jonathan Dunn from RBC. Mr. Dunn, your question, please.
Oh, hi there. I have two questions. The first was, I couldn't see in the slides the number of lands that you'd acquired or sites that you'd renegotiated. I was just wondering if you could give an update there. And then secondly, so that we can back recurring cash flow back to, I guess, EBITDA growth, can you sort of comment on the CapEx phasing? Is it very skewed to 2018, 2019?
Thank you, Joe. We have a slide that is in the slide number. The slide, it is in the plan presentation, but we reported the numbers. Exactly, in the slide number 7, we reported all the sites where we renegotiated the lease contracts that include a simple renegotiation and the cash advance. So far, starting from 2015, we have renegotiated 3,500 contracts, and we have acquired 600 lands, either lands or long-term right of usage for rooftops. And you also, I didn't mention in my speech, but here we put also another useful number, that is the number of contracts that have not yet been addressed in our renegotiation process. So there is an additional number of 3,000 contracts that could be available for our renegotiation, cash advance, land acquisition programs. I didn't get the second question. Was about our capability to invest. Am I right?
Oh, just the phasing of the 300 million capex to 2020.
No, I think is more or less is linear. Is 100 per year. In our numbers is just a bit less in the first, just a bit more in the last, but generally speaking is quite linear. The differences are not material.
Can I ask a follow-on question, if that's okay? Have you started any negotiations with Iliad around them taking tenancies?
Absolutely, yes. I think that we started our negotiation. I traveled to Paris as soon as the remedies undertaken by Wind and Dutch were public. So I think I was the first to visit them in Paris. So we are absolutely negotiating with them. And as I was telling you, and as I was every time in every call confirmed, we do believe that we could take a relevant share of their the towers they will be looking for because of the quality of our assets.
Do we think we're sort of 12 months away from a first, I guess, I don't know what the right term is, bolting onto a steel tower?
Listen, Joe, this of course is related to their project, their speed for network deployment. And so I have no idea. My first gut feeling is just a feeling is that this should happen absolutely sooner than the expectation. So it's not related to us. We are ready. We already offered price, lease, condition, terms, whatever. And as soon as they start really to install their equipment, we are absolutely ready to catch this opportunity.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Fernando Cordero from Santander. Mr. Cordero, your question, please.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my three questions. The first one is related with the guidance, and particularly on the assumptions of the guidance. Two elements there. The first thing, of the tenancy ratio increase that you're expecting, how much of it is coming from existing clients and how much from new clients? It is also related with the previous question on Iliad. And the second comment on the guidance is at which extent, also applying to the tenancy ratio, at which extent are you assuming additional sites decommission, or you are not going to decommission for the sites, as it is my understanding. The second question, also partially related with the EBITDA, makes sense, you are not offering guidance on EBITDA given the potential impact from IFRS 16, but assuming the current accounting standards. Would you like to share with us what would be the equivalent guidelines for EBITDA in the period 2018-2020? And the final question is, assuming, we know that Telecom Italia is in the process of spinning off the fixed network, I would like to know if you have any kind of views at which extent that can affect to your business. If there is a wholesaler incentive to act in the wholesale market than before, if this spin-off is going to take place, that is going to have, for example, for your Bajolin plans, or even if it makes sense, or to understand if in the future potential integration between wholesalers or neutral players to be integrated. Not only we have been discussing the case of Enel Open Fiber, but it probably makes more sense to think at which extent there are synergies between INWIT and the potential spin-off of the fixed network of Telecom Italia. Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando. Very simple. It's clear then when we provide a guidance on the co-tenancy, this is of course is the result of many assumptions that we do on the demand that could come from the existing and the demand that could come from new customers. So it's absolutely unreasonable to provide more details. I want just to give you an additional colors, considering that the Iliad plan can at the end become real, concrete, considering that the fixed wireless access is something that will be deployed in the market failure areas, I believe that in our growth, the contribution of the new customer that was absolutely zero in the previous years, just one IoT player, now in the next years will become very, very material. But I don't want to provide breakdown between the two. The second question was about the decommissioning. Just few sides. So we consider that the decommissioning plan ended this year with the 5.2 million of additional fees that TIM has to pay from 2017 onwards because they didn't fulfill the obligation to decommission 1,400 sites. We will have very, very few sites that could be decommissioned in the 2018. But it's likely to say that the project is out, has been delivered. The second is, the third is about EBITDA and recurring free cash flow. As I was telling you, of course, the guidance that we provide, and we decided to provide only the recurring free cash flow guidance, of course, is a sum of our assumption on the traditional EBITDA. I think this could be very, very easily understood. But now, just for this reason, because of the confusion that we can have by putting together numbers based on the old standards and number based on the new standard, we decided to give guidance just on recurring free cash flow. The answer to the fourth question is very, very simple, is no. So it's absolutely, I believe, easy to forecast that we will not be impacted by the network spin-off, by the other. Even our ambition, our goal to become the first neutral player is related to the tower business model. And the backhauling that we will provide, that we will deploy, is backhauling where has not yet been delivered, has not yet been built up by TIM. So I would very, very clearly answer no impact.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Next Last questions come from Mr. Albert Sprenger from Kempen. Mr. Kempen, your question, please.
Thank you, gentlemen. I just have a bit of a clarification question in line of the questions of my colleague or co-competitor, Jonathan. In the sense that you indicated that you were aiming in the current business plan to acquire roughly 1,400 sites, and indicate for the new business plan that you want to buy another 1,500 sites. I was wondering, is there an overlap between these two numbers, or is the 1,500 sites you want to own, is this something new? Especially when thinking about the potential capex involved, would you say that your pricing policy in order to buy land is still the same?
Yeah, very clear question, and I think it's useful to clarify those numbers for everybody. So, what we are saying, and is clearly reported in slide number, let me start by numbers. First, slide number 7, where you can see that we have already acquired 600 either lands or long-term right of usage. The second is our 18 targets, where you can see that we are planning to reach at the end of this year 1,000 lands or long-term right of usage. And the third information is contained in the slide of the 2020, where we say that we want to move from 1,000 at the end of this year to 1,500 at the end of 2020. So I have to clarify that we underperformed in 2018 because we communicated a target of 1.3, and we will close with 1,000. And our target 1.5 is the total sites that we are planning to have both at the end of 2020. The second element was about, we continue to apply our policy. We do not have any strong signal of land aggregator in action, but of course this is a risk that we have carefully to monitor, because we don't want to be, let's say, caught in the same nightmare that TowerCo and mobile operator have been dealing with in the US with the land aggregators.
No, exactly. And if I then may continue on that guidance for the 2020 plan, does that then also mean that your fiber backhauling, the 1K fiber links, is that then the total number you aim to achieve by the end of 2020, and hence includes everything you're doing today, or this is really on top of the current plan?
Albert, congratulations, because you have pinpointed the only two KPIs where we under-delivered. So the first was the land acquisition, where we will close the 28 with 1,000 instead of 1,300. And the second is backhauling, where we plan to reach the 1,000, not at the end this year, but the end of the plan. So those are the unique, I believe, two KPIs where we under-delivered.
Okay, no, but then that's clear to me. Then thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you, everybody. This was the last question for the earnings and plan presentation. Thank you for joining us for your interest in our conference call. Once more, we are pleased by the good year result, and we hope you appreciate too. Thank you again, and have a great evening.
Thank you, everybody.
conference call is over. Thank you for calling.